I am HK Dairyberry. This is my good friend and mentor, Mr. Jim Bradford.
Good morning.
We are both proud members of Harper Fields Church of Christ in Brentwood, Tennessee. And so we are very honored to be invited to share a story with you this morning. We hope our story will be, with our story you will be blessed and inspired. I realize the importance of starting your church service on time, but I was afraid we were going to be late getting here this morning. Traffic on I-65 north from Brentwood was bumper to bumper, and I was driving.
And I was screaming.
As fast as I could to get here. We finally made it. The problem is I couldn't find a parking place. So I don't know where I parked my vehicle. So when you leave church this morning, if any of you see a white SUV with Williamson County license plates, please let me know. That just might be my vehicle. You may not realize by looking at me, I have some disabilities. I am blind and I have cerebral palsy, so I can't do all the things that you, your children, maybe even grandchildren can do. It don't keep me from wanting to do those things. I even dream of doing those things that people have told me all my life I can never do with my disabilities. Like many of you, I love sports. I've always wanted to play sports. I figure with my disabilities, I will never have the opportunity. But just in case the opportunity ever presents itself, like one of your elders, Clyde Head, I've always tried to stay in great tip-top physical condition. For the past 10 years, every morning, my Clyde Head exercise routine includes: I wake up every morning at 5 a.m., try to be real quiet, not to wake my grandmother up, then put on my walking shoes and my Marcus Mariota Tennessee Titans sports attire. Then I woke up a big sweat by walking around the block 3 times as fast as I can. Then I stop, take a couple deep breaths to relax. Then I bend over, I pick up the block. I put the block back in the closet. Then I climb back in bed, sleep to 10. My favorite sport is football. I've always wanted to play football. I figure with my disabilities, I will never have the opportunity. However, a couple years ago, after the University of Alabama Crimson Tide beat the Tennessee Volunteers in football for the 11th consecutive year, I overheard a disgruntled Tennessee football fan say, our quarterback must be blind. He couldn't complete a single pass. Well, folks, when I heard that was the most exciting news I had ever heard. I thought if Tennessee's quarterback's blind, I'm blind. I can probably play quarterback on my high school football team. So when I was in 10th grade, I immediately jogged to the high school football coach's office. I said, "Coach, I want to try out for quarterback." Coach took one look at me, said, "HK, thanks for trying out. You are a brave young man, but you're not fast enough, you don't weigh enough, and you're not tall enough." So as you would expect, I didn't make the team. I didn't give up, though. I was once told, "Your attitude determines your altitude in life." So, like all you members of Hendersonville Church of Christ, I never give up. I like to soar like an eagle chasing a Hendersonville commando. Then I thought to myself, I said, "HK, let's think of something that would be easy for most of you folks today to do, but would be very challenging for a blind boy to do." Then I remembered, I've been riding in my grandmother's vehicle for 27 and a half years now. She makes driving seem really easy. When I heard that your song leader, Blake Parker, drive 50 in a 35-mile-an-hour speed zone while drinking Starbucks coffee and sending text messages at the same time, I thought, since I don't drink coffee and I don't text, driving must be really easy. So I immediately enrolled in driver's education. The instructor took one look at me, said, "HK, thanks for enrolling in this course. You are a brave young man. But you need a learner's permit for completion of this course. Come back when you can get one." Well, folks, as you can imagine, I hadn't been back, and I won't be going back until they can invent a car that can safely drive itself. Folks, I realize we're Hendersonville Church of Christ. You expect your preach ministers, your Sunday school teachers, and your guest speakers to always be honest and tell the truth. Well, I must apologize to you this morning. What I just told you is not the truth. It's a joke. With my disabilities, I cannot play football or drive a car. Where I went to school, all of us boys are blind. So we don't have a football team, much less offer driver's education. If they offer driver's ed, they'd lose all their federal funding. Plus, the accident rate in Tennessee would be a lot higher. As Romans 12:6 says, God has given each of us the ability to do certain things well. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. In sports, there's small schools like Lipscomb University. If they have to play a big school like University of Tennessee or Kentucky in basketball, they'll consider the underdog, which means they're not expected to win. Well, in life, I have always been considered the underdog. What I mean by that is people tell me things I can't do without complimenting me for things that I can. When I was born, due to the accident that took my mother's life, doctors told my grandmother I probably wouldn't live long. Well, July 8th of this past year, I just turned 27 years old, and I am still kicking. Doctors also told my grandmother I would probably be confined to a wheelchair. Well, I walked in here today, no need for a wheelchair. In school, teachers told my grandmother and I that I wasn't smart enough nor capable to handle a regular class load. So they were saying I wouldn't graduate high school. Well, June 1st, 2012, this little underdog pulled a major upset. I completed all the courses required of me by the state of Tennessee in order to receive a regular academic high school diploma. And I passed them all, including algebra, which was especially a challenge for a blind boy who reads and writes well with only the use of one hand. What I am sharing with you folks today is, with God in your life, anything is possible. If you work hard, determine what your capabilities are, maintain positive attitude, you can accomplish most anything in life within your capabilities. The only disability any of us have in life is a negative attitude. So I encourage all of you to always be positive. If you are ever down, depressed, just think things can't get any worse. Just pick up the phone, call toll free 20HK Dairy Berry in Nashville. I will give you a no charge, 100% money back guaranteed Hendersonville Church of Christ pep talk. Before I was 9 years old, my grandmother and I did not have much of a social life. We didn't have kids in the neighborhood that would play with me. Kids in the neighborhood looked at me like I was different. They were afraid of me. So when I wasn't in school, a lot of the time I was at home from the time I got up in the morning till I went to bed at night, listening to the radio. That can be fun a lot of days, but also that can get to be very lonely, especially for a blind boy who is not mobile without assistance. But all that changed when I turned 9 years old. I met my good friend and mentor, Mr. Jim Bradford. He quickly changed my life. He let me do things normal boys my age get to do that I'd never gotten to do. He became a father figure to me, which I never really had, because my father abandoned me at age 5 for 10 years. Mr. Bradford let me borrow his eyes. What I mean by that is, seeing is how I can't see. He painted wood pictures for me so I could visualize things he was seeing. He told me he loved me. He told me he was proud of me. He was proud to introduce me to his friends. He told me I would be a success in life. He and his wife, Brenda, started taking me to church, where I was baptized on Sunday, January 24th, 2010. And he told me I'll be a success in life. And he and his wife, Brenda, also buy me clothes so I look like other young men my age. Yes, 18 and a half years later, Mr. Bradford still lets me borrow his eyes, and he never charges me any rent for them.
Sometimes we wake up in the morning not knowing what plans God has for us. October 16th of 1999, I got up on Saturday morning. It was the first cool Saturday morning that fall, and I went to McDonald's in Green Hills to meet my tennis partners, something that I had done for about 20 years with the same group. We would have breakfast from about 7 o'clock till about 8:20, and then we would drive over to the indoor tennis courts, and for the next hour and a half, we'd play tennis. Normally, after we would finish our tennis match, being old guys, we would sit around cooling off by drinking Gatorade and water and talking about the family and for 30 or 40 minutes. But for some reason that morning, and at that point in my life, I typically drank one cup of coffee a day. And I'd had my cup of coffee at McDonald's earlier, but while I was playing tennis, all I could think about was going to Starbucks in Brentwood near my home to buy a cup of coffee. So when we finished our tennis match that morning, rather than hanging with the guys for the next 30 minutes, I just told them bye, went and got in my car and headed to Brentwood to Starbucks. And when I got to the intersection of Franklin Road and Old Hickory Boulevard, I had a very minor decision to make, something that all of you probably have made this morning. What color dress do I wear? What color do I wear a jacket? Is it that cool? My decision that morning was if I turn right and drive exactly 1 mile, something I'd done before, I'm at Starbucks. I look to my left, and 30 feet in the air is a red and white sign that says, Mrs. Winter's Chicken and Biscuits. And I turned left rather than turning right. And I drove 8/10 of a mile into a parking lot that had as many potholes as our streets do right now here in Nashville. And I went into a chicken restaurant to buy my gourmet coffee. When I walked in, there was nobody that I noticed in the dining area, and I assumed it was maybe the break. It was about 10:45, and I assumed it was the break between lunch and breakfast. So I ordered my cup of coffee, and rather than fixing it and handing it to me, they give you a cup, and you go over to a coffee urn. I looked at the sign above the coffee urn, and it says, we serve Maxwell House coffee. I grew up living with my grandparents in a small rural area in North Alabama, and they always drank Maxwell House coffee when I was a kid growing up. And I'm thinking, well, this is really great because they loved it, and this will be just as good as a Starbucks. So I fill my coffee cup, and I put one cream in it, put one Splenda. I tasted it. I needed another Splenda. Put another second Splenda. It was just perfect. Put the top on it, and I turned to leave the restaurant. At that point in my life, I was 56 years old. Brenda and I, my wife, we have grown daughters. They were both out of college and moved away from home. And certainly at 56, I wasn't looking to add another kid to our life. I found that morning that God had different plans for me and the kid too. Because as I turned in and started to leave, I saw a little boy sitting at a table by himself. No one else is in the dining area except this little boy, kind of bent over a little black boombox radio. I know it had been dropped and broken at least once because there were three strips of silver duct tape holding the batteries in. And what I noticed about the little boy was, first off, he had on shorts. And it was a very cold morning. He had on a T-shirt, white one, that had food stains on it, maybe from breakfast that morning or maybe meals earlier in the week. He needed a haircut. But what I really focused on was he had white plastic braces on both legs. And I realized something was probably wrong with this young man. Now, I was 56 years old, and at that point in my life, I had encountered people in wheelchairs. I had encountered children with Down syndrome. I had encountered people, I'm sure, with cerebral palsy, but I'd never stopped to talk to any of them. I'd never stopped to talk to their parents. If I had, I wouldn't have known what to say. All I did was I felt sorry for them and I had pity for them. And I tried not to stare at them for fear that they would catch me staring and it would be embarrassing to me. But as I'm about to leave with my perfect tasting cup of coffee, I'm going to walk right by this table with the little boy with white braces. But curiosity got the best of me, and I turned around behind the counter, and there was a lady with a T-shirt on that had a chicken on it, had her name badge on it, and her name was Helen. I said, "Pardon me, Helen, who's the little boy?" She said, "Oh, that's HK. He's our sweetheart." I said, "Who is he?" She said, "Well, the lady who sold you the coffee, her name is Pearl. She's his grandmother, and she can't afford a babysitter on weekends, so he comes and sits while she works." I said, "How long does he sit?" She said, "Only from 8 till 5. Now, all of you folks probably are commandos from Hendersonville High School, and I know you learn quickly in math that would be 18 or 19 hours a weekend that this little boy has to sit while she works. And I said, "You've got to be kidding." And I really offended her. She said, "Well, he doesn't do it every day. He goes to school during the week." So I feel like I'm satisfied with the answer, and I'm ready to walk out of the restaurant and get in my car with my perfect tasting cup of coffee. And she sarcastically says, as I'm walking away from the coffee urn, she says, "And he is blind." And I found out that morning that my right eye is much more emotional than my left eye. Because when I heard that, I was touched like I'd never been touched in my life. This tear formed in my eye that was so large that it didn't run down my cheek. It actually dropped out of my eye and bounced off of my warm-up jacket. And I walked right over to the table, something I'd never done before, to this little boy with braces on his legs. And I said, "Hey, buddy, what's your name?"
"I'm HK. What's your name?"
"My name is Jim."
"Nice to meet you."
"It's nice to meet you.
Where do you live?"
"I live in Brentwood."
"What street?"
"Harpeth River Drive."
"What's that off of?"
"Oh, Hickory Boulevard."
"What time did you get up?"
6 o'clock.
"Then what did you do?"
"I took a shower."
"Then what?"
"Put on my tennis clothes."
"Then what?"
"I drove to Green Hills to meet my tennis partners."
"Then what?"
We'll stop right there. Some of you folks are old enough to remember one of my favorite all-time movies, Groundhog Day. If you saw that movie, you know that Phil Connors, the weatherman, is in a little small town in Pennsylvania, and he gets caught in a time warp, and he wakes up every morning reliving yesterday. The only difference is this morning he knows a little bit more about the people that he did the day before. Well, HK couldn't carry on the conversation. All he could ask me was, "What did you do next?" And after about 2 minutes, I felt like I was being interrogated by the FBI. And I was thinking, this is the craziest kid I've ever met. He's cute, but he's crazy. So I said, "HK, it's so nice to meet you, but Brenda, my wife, has given me a list of things I've got to do this morning, and I've got to go."
"Nice to meet you, too. Hope to see you again soon."
"Well, I hope to see you again soon." And I didn't realize that day, as of this morning, was an 18-and-a-half-year commitment. Because we've been buddies ever since. You know, I got in the car, put my perfect tasting cup of coffee in the cup holder, and I never took the top off to drink it. I couldn't get the little boy off my mind, sitting there for 8 or 9 hours on a Saturday morning by himself all day, not mobile. I didn't know all the details at the time. I just knew he had braces on his legs. The next Saturday afternoon, about 3 o'clock, I've played tennis that morning, and I'm out raking leaves. I've already had my cup of coffee at McDonald's, but I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if the little boy's at the restaurant. So I went in and changed my jacket and told Brenda I was going to Brentwood to get a cup of coffee. But I really fibbed to her because I was going to see if HK was there. I pulled in the parking lot, looked through the window, and sure enough, I saw a silhouette sitting at the same table. I walked in. We won't go through the exercise because it would be repetitious, but I walked up to his table and I said, "Hey, buddy." He said, "What's your name?" I said, "Jim. Are you the man that came to see me last week?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Where do you live?" And he went through that same list of questions. But I sat down with him that morning and spent about 20 minutes, and I don't remember what we got up to, but it was probably 10:45. But what'd you do next? What'd you do next? The next Saturday, I came back to visit him again. He was there again, so I sat down and spent 30 minutes with him. Same routine. I came back the next Saturday. He was there. And I started the conversation this time. And I said, "HK, let me tell you, It's Jim again. I'm back to visit with you. I really like coming to visit with you, but here's the deal. Every Saturday in the winter, my routine is very similar. I get up about 6 o'clock, take a shower, put on my clothes to play tennis, drive to McDonald's in Green Hills, and I play tennis. I do that every winter, and so here's the deal. If you ask me today, what did you do next, what did you do next, this will be the last time I'm coming to visit with you. And I found out that morning how intelligent he was. He never asked me those questions again. And he began to tell me a little bit about himself as best he could. His grandmother was a cashier, and I noticed that after I'd been coming back to visit for maybe 6 or 8 times, you know, and I've always thought, if you don't have a social life, and the only person you have to talk to all day at home is a little blind boy, probably, you know, there's a lot you'd like to say. And I noticed that his grandmother Pearl, who's here this morning, and she'll be back if you'd like to meet her later. She's a sweet lady, and she's dedicated 27 years of her life to giving her grandson a better life than she gave his father. And she'll tell you that. But I noticed that when I would pull in to come in visit, she would take her break. Well, when she started taking her break sitting with us, I stopped talking and I started listening. And basically what I learned was, first off, HK's mother and father came from, for the most part, dysfunctional families. I learned that a lot of people on both sides of both families didn't work for a living, but because of some condition, they got a government check. His grandfather was getting a check because he had substance abuse. He had an aunt that was getting a check because she had depression. If you had a little ailment, I guess you go down and you get a check. But I also found out that HK wasn't blind and has cerebral palsy because of birth defects. And if there's any teenagers here today, this is one of the things I want you to listen to. He is blind, has been all of his life, and will be all of his life, has cerebral palsy, has been since about the first 30 or 40 days of his birth, after his birth, and always will have cerebral palsy because of the lifestyle of two people. His parents. His mother, on July 7th of 1990, his mother, Mary, was 19 years old. Mary's mother was at one time, and I don't know if she was at this particular time, but she had been an over-the-road truck driver. And I imagine a 13 or 14-year-old girl needs more love and attention that she had gotten at home. So when Mary was in the 7th grade, she decided education wasn't important, and she dropped out of school. Mary had a baby at age 15, and now here she is age 19. On July 7th of 1990, William, HK's father, was 26 years old. William lived with his grandparents growing up while his mother lived in Nashville during the week to work and support her son financially. When he was in 10th grade, he decided an education wasn't important for him because he had met some rowdy friends that were into drugs and alcohol, and he thought that was the lifestyle he wanted, so he dropped out of school. For some reason, people like this seem to attract one another. So on July 7th, 1990, William and Mary have been living together for about 8 months. Mary's 6 months pregnant. William is working. After dropping out of school, he guaranteed himself of minimum wage paying jobs for the rest of his life. And on July 7th of 1990, he's working in Murray County on a farm baling hay. Now, I grew up on a farm with my grandparents, and the hay bales that we used to produce were square or rectangular. They weighed about 35 to 45 pounds. And you can imagine on July 7th in Middle Tennessee, it was probably 98 degrees, humidity's high. Those bales weigh 35 to 45 pounds. If you're loading those on a trailer all day for 10 hours and then putting them in a barn loft, that's hard work. And I imagine that 5 o'clock when William's about to get off, he's thirsty and hungry and dehydrated. Mary, I wasn't there, but I imagine Mary got up about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, got herself ready to go out that night because he's going to make $50 cash that day, and that'll put them at the top of the income chain of their buddies at the pub, where they're going to have some fun. So she goes to work to the farm to pick him up. On the way, she stops at a convenience store, fills a cooler full of ice and beer. Now imagine when 5 o'clock arrives and she raises a trunk and opens up that cooler full of beer. He probably gives her a high five, might have even hugged her, I'm not sure. But that beverage would satisfy his thirst, his hunger, his dehydration. And I wasn't there, but I assume they probably consumed all the beers that were in the cooler. Now on the way back, as it typically happens, William is driving. Mary had driven to pick him up, but he's driving. She's not buckled in, maybe because she's 6 months pregnant, maybe because she wanted to sit closer to William, I'm not sure. But somehow he loses control of the vehicle doing about 65 miles an hour, runs off the road and hits a 150-year-old oak tree head on. The oak tree, I think, lost a little bark, some leaves, but the car was demolished. William suffered a bruised sternum, a little cut on his lip. Mary was ejected from the vehicle, and when the paramedics arrived, they determined that she had severe head trauma and basically was brain dead. They also realized that the unborn baby was still living. So they called Vanderbilt, and they sent their life flight helicopter down to Maury County to pick her up, and they flew her back to Vanderbilt Medical Center. The next morning, July the 8th, about 5:30, Rosemary, Mary's mother, arrives at the hospital. And the doctors approach her with a major decision. Now, I told you my minor decision the morning I made HK was to turn right or turn left to get my coffee. Rosemary was given the decision, and it went probably something like this. Mrs. Moon, your daughter has suffered severe head trauma. She is not going to survive. She is on life support. Once you make your decision this morning, we're going to remove her from life support. Your grandson is still living. We can deliver him. We're afraid that if we do, he probably won't survive. If he does survive, he'll probably have, more than likely, a lifetime of medical issues. Thank God for her choice that morning and that decision, because she said, deliver the baby. If that hadn't have occurred, we wouldn't be your speakers this morning. However, HK did turn 27 in July 8th of last year, and the grandmother that said deliver him has never seen him because she never came back. So when I first met HK, he weighed about 50 pounds, and I would bring him over to my house, and he'd love to sit in my lap and put his arms around my neck and tell me he loved me, and I was thinking so many times what the grandmother had missed out on by not having the love of her grandson. Anyway, that's the way he started his life. He spent the first 96 days in neonatal intensive care. Initially, he could actually see because we spoke last year at a retired nurses association meeting at Vanderbilt, and the lady that the doctor handed this baby, newborn baby, to was his nurse for the entire 96 days he was in neonatal intensive care. We met her. Surprisingly, she has a lot in common with HK. She's 4'10" and he's 4'10". They're both two little short people. But she said that she just loved HK. She said all the babies in the nursery were called Baby Bradford, Baby Brown, Baby Parker, except for HK. And from the minute that they named him HK, and HK doesn't stand for anything. It's the first letter of the middle name of his mother and father. But once they named him HK, he was just HK to everybody, not Baby Dearyberry. He was just HK. And she said, I love to kind of talk to him in his little container that they had him in with all the wires, and his little eyes would just follow me. But soon after he was in the hospital, they determined he had a valve that wouldn't close. And he wasn't strong enough. He weighed 2 pounds. He wasn't strong enough to have open heart surgery. They put him on oxygen. And they left him on pure oxygen long enough to get his body strengthened enough for the surgery, which was successful. But because they kept him on it too long, his retinas didn't develop, so he's blind. About halfway through the stay in neonatal intensive care, they came in one day, thought they had lost him because he had a brain bleed. It repaired itself, but it cost him. He has paralysis on his right side because he suffered a stroke, and that caused him to have cerebral palsy. Now, that's the bad part. He spent 96 days there. There's nothing else I can think of that is really sad about HK because he's such a positive person. He said, Mr. Bradford, I can't change the past. I'm blind. I know it. I've got to think about good things in the future. So he never dwells on any bad things. Matter of fact, sometimes if I tell him stuff, and maybe this is because of cerebral palsy, if I tell him something that's bad, he laughs. He said, I know I shouldn't be laughing, but I can't help myself. So anyway, we met, and we've just had so much fun. I'm watching the clock, and I hope you like our story. I understand y'all are used to long-winded preachers. I'm kidding. But if we go over, it's I want to share as much of our story as we can. But HK has accomplished so much in life that it's just amazing. For example, he was the longest tenured student in the history of the Tennessee School for the Blind. He started at age 3, probably more of nursery care than anything else. And you can stay in their school until you're 22 years old or you graduate, whichever occurs first. Some kids aren't capable of graduating, but at 22, they get a certificate of completion. And his grandmother believed in him so much, she just was going to make sure he got an education. And but teaching a blind boy has to take a lot of patience. But he had a teacher from age 5 through age 7 that did something that in 150-year history of the school had never been accomplished. She taught HK, if you're using a Braille machine, it's like a computer. It takes both hands. He is paralyzed on his right side, has no feeling in his right arm. This teacher spent enough time and patience with him to taught him how to use a Braille machine with one hand. So today he's literate. He can read and write Braille. If he uses Braille, he's one half the speed of a person that's got two hands, but he was the only person to ever learn to do that at that time after 150 years history of the school. So today he is literate. He also graduated from high school. He took all the courses, and if we were speaking to students today or to school, I would say teachers, never give up on any student. Because I started going to his IEP meetings with him at his grandmother's invitation soon after I met him. And the teachers really didn't have a lot of confidence in HK's ability to take a regular curriculum, regular class load. And 50 years ago, what they had him doing would be, 50 years ago when I was growing up, he would be making brooms or putting pencils in a box with what they were teaching. But one teacher, Bill Schenck, believed in him, and he went to the faculty and staff and convinced them that he was smart enough, he had the normal IQ, he should be in a regular graded class environment. And they said, Bill, we don't think it's going to work, it's going to hinder the teachers and students, but we'll try it. He was old enough, so they put him in the 8th grade. And after 9 weeks, Brian, you know how he was doing after 9 weeks? Pretty well. No, Brian, he wasn't. He was just doing miserable. And the teacher said, Bill, I'll give you a second chance in a minute. Said, Bill, no, he's holding everybody back. He's too slow, and he's just not making it. And Bill Schenck said, let's don't give up. Maybe he's not mature enough for the 8th grade. Let's move him back. So they moved him to the 6th grade. After 9 weeks, Brian, you get a second chance. How do you think he did? Pretty well. No, he did magnificent. He made the honor roll. Okay, you're right. Okay, and after that, education wasn't a problem for HK. Matter of fact, after the 6th grade ended, that he had done so well, he skipped the 7th grade and went right to the 8th grade. And the day he graduated on June the 1st of 2012, just a month and a half before his 22nd birthday, or just a little over a month before his 22nd birthday. The mayor of Nashville, Carl Dean, who he had been the acting mayor for earlier in January of that year, where he unsuccessfully attempted to lower property tax at 50%, Mayor Dean came to his graduation, and I thought that was pretty special. Anyway, he rides horses, he drives a boat, he snow skis, he's been to Colorado 6 consecutive years snow skiing for a week, just amazing. He's flown an airplane, and yes, he says he safely flew us back from Kentucky.
I did not.
But the gentleman who gave him that trip accuses him of dozing off and hitting 2 buzzards. But he says he didn't hit a thing. Now, let me tell you, he also has, we have an introductory video when we speak, and we speak all over the country. We've never advertised. Last year, we spoke 53 times in 11 states plus the Grand Cayman Islands. We spoke to almost 22,000 people last year. We charge a fee to speak, but we're funding a trust fund for HK's future care with what he earns. We don't write any checks on it because one of these days, I don't know how long we can do this together. I'm 75 now, and I was 56 when I met him. And he says, I'm going to live to be 50 more years. I said, that'll be the oldest human in history. hopefully we'll have enough money in the trust one of these days that he can live fairly comfortably. That's our goal. But everything he does is he does it with unbelievable accomplishments. His memory. He is one of maybe 12 people in the world that has hyperthymesia. He can recall every minute of every day of his life since he was about 4 years old. Now, when we go back, if you would like to come meet HK a little bit later, one of the questions you might want to ask him, HK, can you tell me the day of the week I was born? And Blake, would you give us your birth date?
June
4th,
1968. June 4th, 1968. You were born on a Tuesday.
Anything else happened on your birthday?
That day in the year 2000 was the final day of the Billy Graham Crusade at Adelphia Coliseum in Nashville.
Okay. HK has this great gift. In addition to recalling every minute of his day of his life, he has a special gift of birth dates. Sometimes autistic people or autistic children have that same ability. But women especially love to know this, but some women will say, he'll say, when's your birthday? And they'll say, June 4th. What year? Oh, I'm not going to tell you the year. Well, I'll tell you something, and I'll keep it a secret. And then as soon as they tell, 1948, huh? So he can't keep a secret. But with his memory, with me traveling with him, it's sort of like traveling with your personal secretary or your Rolodex card. He doesn't forget anything, so as soon as he wakes up every morning, he's at our house. And he's been going to church with us now for almost 18 years, and he's been spending weekends with us for almost 17 years. And every time he gets up at my house, the first thing he says, and most of us yawn and stretch getting up. As soon as I cut off the little noisemaker that's in his room, we call it a wave machine, he immediately sits right up. Good morning, Mr. Bradford. Let me tell you who's having birthdays this week and what today's anniversary. And he starts out on a history thing with me as soon as he wakes up every morning. I spend about $24 a month on birthday cards. So we go buy birthday cards. But anyway, the memory thing is really great. Let me just share a couple of stories with you. It can be wonderful because having a person with his skills with memory, the 18 years that we've been buddies, I have never forgotten our anniversary. I have two grown daughters. I've never missed their birthdays, my two grandchildren, because he reminds me. And we donated, many of you might recall Holly Bobo, a young lady over in West Tennessee that was murdered 7 years ago. We've become really good friends with her parents. And we've spoken twice at Darden, at Corinth Baptist Church in Darden, Tennessee. And back in November, we donated in her honor a pink dogwood tree. So that because they had pink ribbons every place while they were searching for her, and then after they found her body, they kept the pink ribbons. They added a little green ribbon in the center, and all the signs says "Justice for Holly." And so HK and I spoke over there. We've spoken twice at Corinth Baptist Church where her parents go, Dana and Karen. And so he had this he had this idea: why don't we donate a tree? So we had a pink dogwood planted. And we just called, as I pulled into the parking lot this morning, I called Brother Don, who is the minister. And I said, and he called me right back. I left him a message. I said, we're calling to find out if the dogwood tree is blooming. And it's about 6 or 7 feet. And he called back this morning. He said, it's got buds on it. It's got some pink blooms. And we put a little thing at the base of the tree that says, planted in memory of Holly. And what we said was, one of these days, people will forget Holly, but if the kids that grow up here come out here and see every spring the pink blooms on this tree, they'll remember Holly. And then if they ask, who is Holly Bobo, they'll keep her memory alive, her legacy. And so that's something that HK did. But anyway, it can be wonderful, the memory thing. However, it can be kind of embarrassing also for some of his close friends. Let me give you a couple of examples. In Brentwood, we have a fast food restaurant called Backyard Burger. The first time HK stayed with us, when he first started coming, before he started spending weekends with us, he would go to church with us, and then his grandmother would get off at 5 o'clock, so I'd take him back at 5 o'clock to Mrs. Winters, and he would go home with her. Well, she called one Sunday afternoon during football season, and it was about 2 o'clock. She said, "Jim, this is Pearl. We just have no business today," and said, "My boss has told me I can leave. Would you bring HK to the restaurant?" I said, "Well, Pearl, he's watching," and I say watching, TV was on, he keeps the radio in his lap, listening, because Mike Keith makes it more exciting than the announcers on TV. And so he's listening to a Titans ball game. I said, "Pearl, if you don't mind, he's just engrossed in this ball game. It's not over. Why don't you just let him go to church with us tonight? I'll bring him home after church." She said, "Okay, that's fine." Well, Brenda and I typically went out with some other adults every Sunday night after church. And we would go to a fast food restaurant, spend an hour or two just having socializing. So first time ever, we take the first kid, because nobody in this group has young kids. And when we get into the restaurant, it's a big crowd. We're lined up, and the counter, HK, in 2003, he had hamstring surgery, which allows him to stretch his legs. After the surgery, after 3 months of getting the cast off there, he was about 3 inches taller. So we go in, and HK is actually not quite as tall as the counter is high. And the man behind the counter kind of looks over when we get up to order, and you actually place your order at one window. They give you a number, go get a seat. They call you go back and get your food. And this guy's looking over the counter. He said, "Pardon me," he said, "is that you, HK?
"Yes, what's your name?"
"I'm Stanley."
"I'm HK. Are you the one that worked at Miss Winters?"
"Yeah, I used to work at Mrs. Winters. You're the grandmother Pearl over on Franklin Road."
"Are you the one that got fired for smoking marijuana?"
Folks, I don't have to apologize. That's true. Brenda looked at me. She said, "Did he say what I think he did?" I said, "He did." She said, "Order and let's get out of here." Stanley was a good sport, though. He said, "HK, that was me, but I've changed my ways. I won't ever do that again." And then HK loves sports, and his favorite all-time Titan is a gentleman by the name of Kevin Mawai. Kevin went to LSU. He was a first-round draft pick. He's in the LSU Sports Hall of Fame. This year, he was eligible for the first time to be elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was drafted by the Seahawks. He played there for about 6 or 7 years. Then he was traded to the New York Jets. He played there for a few years. And then his last 4 years of his career, he was traded to the Titans here in Tennessee. And he actually played 17 years before retirement. Well, Kevin bought a farm next to Doug and Lisa Durr in Williamson County. And so they had been telling Kevin about this little blind boy, HK, who is their good friend. And one Saturday morning, my cell phone rings, and I answer, and it's Doug. He said, "Hey, Jim, this is Doug Durr. What are you and HK doing?" I said, we're at Chick-fil-A having breakfast. He said, "Well, Kevin wants to meet HK this morning. Could you bring him out to the farm?" I said, "Well, sure." He would just go bonkers over meeting a Tennessee Titan. So anyway, we drive out to the farm, and here comes Kevin, his wife Stacy, walking across the pasture. And Kevin at that time was, again, active football player. He's 6'2", 295 pounds, and about 2% body fat. He is truly a man. Here's 4'10" HK Derryberry, about 120 pounds, and they're holding hands, and they bond very quickly. Matter of fact, I assumed it was allergy season because Kevin has these tears running down his eyes as they're holding hands talking. It's also the 2006 football season. And the season has already started, and the Titans have already played 6 games. And their record is 5 losses and 1 victory. And Kevin has to leave at 3 o'clock to go back to the Titans for the walkthrough so that they play the game tomorrow. So they bond and talk, and finally said, "HK, I've got to go. By the way, have you ever seen a Titans game?"
"I've been to a preseason game. Not a regular season."
"How would you like to see a regular season game?"
"I would love to."
"How would you like to sit in the skybox with my family?"
"I would love to." "And are any of the games sold out?"
are any of the games sold out? Well, sure, HK, all the Titans games are sold out.
I don't know why, because y'all are no good.
Like Stanley, Kevin was a good sport. He said, HK, you are right. We are no good, but I'm going to go back and tell the offensive lineman what you told me. And you know, they wound up, after being 1-5, they wound up 8-8. And every time they'd win a game, HK would say, Mr. Bradford, do you think it was because of my pep talk with Kevin? Now, Kevin, after he retired, he moved back to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And today, though, if I ask HK if he wants to go to a Titans game, he'll say, are we sitting in a skybox? I say, no, HK. He said, you know, I don't like cheap seats.
I did not say.
Now, we've had fun today, and everything we've shared with you, except his opening comments, which he apologized for, everything is true. We do have a book that is available. It's called The Awakening of H.K. Derryberry. Proceeds from the royalties of the book go also in his trust fund. And if you'd like a book, you can go to Amazon.com and order it. Our book is in hardback, in paperback, Kindle, audio. Our book last year received the audio book of the year for nonfiction faith-based books. It just came out in German, and we just found out last weekend that it's now in Braille. So we're so thrilled with that. So if you'd like a book, I've got a copy back there that you can look at, but you can go to Amazon.com. How many of you here, because if I don't ask you this now, he's going to ask me to ask you. How many of you do Facebook? Raise your hand. Okay. HKDerryberry.com. That's DerryBerry.com. HK. We would really like for you to go to his website and like his fan page. We only need about 200 people to be at 10,000 people that follow him. And after today, one day next week, we'll probably have a story about our being here at Hendersonville Church of Christ. And so we'd love for you to like his fan page. We're going to leave you with a couple of things this morning. One is, if God is in your life, anything is possible. I think HK has proved that. He just can do almost anything within his capabilities. And sometimes when we're complaining, and I'm one of the world's worst, I get to thinking sometimes about depressed and, gosh, this is what a terrible day. And then I stop and think, gee, what about HK? You know, he's blind, he got CP and all these things he can't do, but he never lets it bother him. And so it kind of cheers me up. The other thing is I want to share with you that is all of you are going to meet an HK. You probably be like me, you won't know when you do it, but there's an HK out there, probably not a blind boy with cerebral palsy. It's more than likely somebody that needs a friend that's going through some hardship. Could be parents that are having problems with their children. Could be a husband and wife having a marital problem. Could be financial problems, job problems. And if you find out about it, you may be like I was with HK. I had no idea what do you say to a blind boy with cerebral palsy sitting in a restaurant wearing braces on his legs. And I just went up and said, hey, buddy, what's your name? 18 and a half years later, we're still great friends. So if you reach out to those people that need a friend, you're going to change two lives. You're going to change yours and theirs. HK said I'd changed his life drastically. I guarantee you he has changed mine much more than I've changed his. It's just a pleasure. You know, I didn't have a son. I can't imagine having one. I'd love any more than HK. But he's just a neat guy, and we have lots of fun. And we're just so honored that you invited us to come share the story today. There are a lot more funny stories, if you like the funny ones, in the book. So if you get the book, you like it. If enough of you ordered the book, we'll let Blake call me back some Sunday or some Wednesday night. We'll come back up and sign your books. Okay? So thank you all. God bless you. Thank you for having us today.